It's a Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Baby Friday. Welcome to the show. JD and Ailish holding it down after a very well-anticipated and rightfully so NHL Game 1 last night, and the Toronto Blue Jays winning in extra innings. We had a good night.
Yeah, we had a good night, but there's nothing quite like the night before work when you're about to go on a four-day weekend, which is what you're experiencing right now. Like, this is the worst part, what you're doing, like, right now. This is the only thing. You're like, whatever. This is just get this out of the way. These next 3 hours. You're in full mail-in mode. It's okay.
I can see
nobody
my
blames
bags
you.
I'm packed in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. Look over my computer. Exactly. Like, you're going to Montreal for F1. I like how so I'm going to interview Daniel Ricciardo later today. Who cares? You're going to Montreal for F1. Yeah. Here's how you'll get over it. When you're drinking your like $38 F1 beer and you're wearing your F1.
I have no idea how much the prices and stuff are at F1. I'm expecting them to be like, you know, people complain about Leafs beers at Scotiabank Arena. It's going to be probably twice as bad, I expect. Like, I don't know. I have no baseline understanding of how much things will cost there, but it's not a rich, it's not a poor sport, is what I'm saying.
They're going to gouge you.
Oh, worth
gonna,
it.
You're spending $8 on a water, kid. Like, uh-oh. You're, oh, yeah.
I just won't drink any water. No problem.
Oh, yeah. No, that's always good, right? There's nothing funnier than the feeling you get when you go to a Blue Jays game. Like, I'm heading down to the ballpark today. When you head to the Blue Jays game and you grab the water or two waters before you walk into the stadium and you go, I'm a genius for buying two waters for $5 instead of just buying a water bottle, you know, bringing one from like a grocery store from home. Mm-hmm. You buy one before at a hot dog stand and you go, I'm a genius. Look at me. I spent only $5 because you have to tip the guy for water, mm-hmm. right? It's $4 for two waters, but you tip $1.
Yeah,
$5 for two waters. And you're like, I can bring these into the game. I'm allowed. And I'm a genius. Wow.
And then you save so much money that you're like, well, I'm just going to buy another extra drink.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple extra loony dogs.
Although there is, I always do recommend, make sure you do grab those waters before you head in. So, yeah, you're heading to Montreal. I'm super jealous. I do want to talk a little bit more about it. But here's my setup for the day. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you, when you are in Montreal, can do something as dumb as Brandon Hyde did last night?
I certainly hope not, because I might not be able to return if I embarrass myself to that extent.
So. Yeah, Orioles manager Brandon
Hyde. Good bar.
Continuing the long legacy of Orioles managers in extra innings, just pooping down their legs, like just little poop pants, and then having it. You got to tape up the socks. Don't let all the poop dribble down into your socks and into your shoes. Brandon Hyde, the bunt thing in extras is one thing, because you go, all right, this is dumb, but we've seen this before. Letting Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit, I think it was a sign of – it's a sign of two things. One, I actually do think it's a bit of a sign of respect to Alejandro Kirk, who we've been saying for a while now is the toughest out on the team. And at least – I think that if you're Ben Ennis, who won't shut up about Alejandro Kirk and keeps saying, like, he's better than Vladdy and doing all these different, like, you know, these, like, extreme Kirk takes right now, you're feeling pretty good. Because you're saying that's a Kirk sign of respect. But Vladdy was clearly hot last night. Guy's seeing the baseball. He's an MVP. That's what he is right now. He's an MVP caliber talent. Whether he has been that this year, no. But can he? Yes. And you let him see a 99-mile-per-hour fastball down the middle of the plate to start, like, yeah, game over. He ripped that baseball in the most predictable way ever. I'm really having a tough time understanding, like, what the justifications were if you're an Orioles fan, other than this. Hey, we're not playing for anything, so just go do stuff. Like, let's just
hey, the game's at 3 tomorrow. Let's hurry up and wrap this up so we can get to bed.
Bingo. I think you're seeing this around baseball a little bit. And it's actually kind of one of the bummers of the sport, and it's the bummers of one of the bummers of just this is like not tanking, but kind of tanking, right? You see this with bad teams right now, where they'll put in bad relievers in big spots and just go, we don't care. It's fine. We're not putting in the right guy. We're going to leave this starting pitcher in here for longer. You see the Cubs do this right now, like a lot, where they'll just be like, yep, we don't care. We're leaving the starter in. We don't care. There was a Cubs starter the other day who gave up, like, I want to say 6 solo home runs to the Yankees, and they just let him stay out there to face Aaron Judge for, like, the third time. He's going, yeah, I've already hit 2 off of you. And they're like, yeah, you're staying out there. You're just going to wear this sucker. Like, 6. They just let him get swatted over and over and over again. And I think the Orioles are just part of that in baseball right now, where they're trying because the players have to try. And it's an individual, it's a, what do we always say about baseball, right? It's an individual sport masquerading as a team sport. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, guy. If anything, baseball is the number one sport where you can be almost guaranteed guys are trying even on bad teams. Right? Like basketball, hockey, maybe you already have your contracts, whatever. It's harder to actually like elevate your play because others around you, you're dependent on. Baseball, you got to go up there. You got to get your numbers. That's how you get paid. I like those Orioles bats. There was a scary moment in that game. I've said it before. They've got some players on that team. But Brandon Hyde, the way he managed that game, the only justification I can come up with is that's what it's like when you just go, yeah, who cares? Yeah, we could try to win this game. We could try to be a little smarter to win this game, but yeah, just go out there and chuck it. Go out there and pitch to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let's just see what happens. Bang, game over. Ah, well, all right. See you tomorrow. Probably lose again.
Great confidence game for like a Vladdy though. If you go out there and you get, yeah, I think that was his first ever walk off win.
It was. That was a shocking. Okay, what was more shocking?
I was shocked to see that stat too.
The Vladimir Guerrero Jr. dad stat, where him and his dad have the exact same stats.
That will never be topped.
Okay, but Vladdy started his Blue Jays tenure with it's a fake walk off, but it was the walk off nonetheless in Montreal. And so you go, oh, Vladdy walk off, and then I think I saw Shy tweet that, and I saw it and went, there's what? No,
I was like, wait, this year? No.
Yeah. No.
In general. Yeah, shocking. Yeah.
But you know why?
Why? Because they don't pitch to him.
Yeah, because you shouldn't pitch to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when it's the next innings. Your cat is right over your shoulder, just like staring
I
now, like
see
your
her
podcast
in the
partner. I know.
She's literally right behind me, like a murderer.
I know. It's very. It's a lot of murder cat vibe right now. And now, of course,
if I don't make it past the next commercial break, you know what happened.
Well, I can't tell if she's supposed to jump in. Like, okay, yeah, actually,
she has comments actually on Vladdy.
I actually think we're past what you just said, though, with Vladdy when it comes to confidence game for Vladdy. Like, I think he's kind of back to being Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And that's a real positive for this team. There are things he can improve. There are obviously, I think that when we're talking about a guy who finished the year last year as the runner-up for MVP and an OPS over 1,000, that, yeah, he can continue to improve, but the improvement is just basically, I think, continuing the play that he's had recently. Mm-hmm. Now, on to the negative from yesterday for the Blue Jays. If you want to talk about things being what they are, it's the bullpen. The bullpen is the bullpen, and there's a big out from Adam Cimberlate, and I think Jimmy Garcia is better than what he showed yesterday, obviously, which is just double bomb. But it gets back to the same core issue that they have when they go to Jimmy Garcia and they go to Adam Cimber, which is the Blue Jays over the last month. Their bullpen over the last month. So, like, you don't have to even take the full season, but the full season tells the similar story. But the bullpen ERA is 15th, right in the middle of the pack. Their K per nine, so strikeouts per nine innings, they're 20th. They don't strike people out, and their bullpen WAR is 18th. Like, by the most important metrics, the Blue Jays have a below-average bullpen. And it's not killing them like it was last season, right? Last season was an atrocity. It really was the story of the season in terms of why they didn't get into the playoffs. They did not get into the playoffs because early on in the year they blew games. But I'm not sure how much longer you really want to go with this. And we have Jeff Blair on later today, and he tweeted, "Hey Ross, mm-hmm. it's time to make a move."
I think he was feeling the same way.
But it is. It's becoming time. It's June 16th. Trevor Richards does not work. I told you, I'm buying Trent Thornton stock, but they need a strikeout guy in this bullpen. They need someone who can just step in here, other than Jordan Romano, that can go out and when there are runners on or there's a big spot and a big bat, get a punch out. Somebody who can just step up there and has wipeout stuff, swing and miss stuff, and gets you out of jams. Because they just do not have that right now. So, like, we've been talking about starting pitching. It's funny because this team, it's just they're obviously incredibly good, but you can see so clearly the things they need. They still probably are going to need a left-handed bat. Right now, that's being papered over by the fact that Kevin Biggio is performing right now. Kevin Biggio is giving them some on-base from the left side down the lineup, which is what they wanted in the first place. It's working for them, so you're not thinking too much about it. Mm-hmm. The next time the Blue Jays go into a slump, I guarantee you that's what we're going to be talking about. We're not talking so much about starting pitching depth because Ross Stripling has faced a couple of tough, or like, not that bad teams. He's faced a couple of really bad teams, and he's been high caliber. So we're not really discussing the need to add another starter because he's been good so far against it. If he starts to struggle and you've got him and Kikuchi going in the same way, you're going to really start to ramp up talking about starting pitching depth. But the thing right now that's just like unavoidable where there's no papering over is this bullpen. They do not have enough guys. They are going to need another guy. They showed the Nate Pearson update again yesterday. He looks like he's pitching well, but it's still strange. It's still weird
it's
the way that they're deploying
him. Yes.
They clearly want to be patient. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Dan said so, but I think I get it. It's just this. It's that they know this is the last kick of the can, Ailish.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they know it. They know from a psychological standpoint with Pearson, a psychological standpoint with the fan base, the timeline merging with the player and the organization. They need him to be Nate Pearson now with the Jays, or it kind of feels like it's going to be Nate Pearson never. And I don't blame them for that line of thinking, given that he's 25 years old. He'll be 26 in August, which is shockingly close. It feels like August now. We're finally getting that like real Toronto summer mugginess. That's going to be the only crappy part of the ballpark today is, oof. They close that dome, and you're in there in the stick zone with the rest of the fellas.
Stick zone. They need those mister sections, like, you know, when you're at Wonderland and like you walk through the mist. They need that at the ballpark.
Do you know what's weird? Like, my body, even that was the best idea you've ever had. Like, yeah.
Thank
and
you. Wow.
I could feel the mist
you
section.
You felt it tingling on your skin.
Except for, here's the thing about it. I can already see the lineup for it.
Oh, and, yeah. It's know, no the, longer the, a walkthrough. It's a stand.
Yeah. The drunk fellas just starting to nudge a little bit, like, get a little push here. Like, come on. Go through the mist. All you got to do is walk. You just got to walk forward. walk through the mist. Don't be a coward. Go through the mist. I don't know what the Nate. I've said it before, but Nate Pearson to me is no longer like the plan. He's the bonus. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not the well, Nate Pearson's going to be the replacement for Ross Stripling, or Nate Pearson's going to be the eighth inning guy, or Nate Pearson's going to be starting depth. I think he's just whatever you can get from Nate Pearson, you take, and you don't involve it in your plans. He's gravy. He's the cherry on top.
It's too bad. It's too bad because that narrative has changed so significantly from a year. Like, a year ago, we thought that we would see a Nate Pearson, hopefully, get through this. He's had those unfortunate series of events where you just felt like this guy might be cursed. But now you're right. It's nothing that you can feel confident about. You almost have to, like, put that aside and say, if he does come, great. But there is no substance that I feel like he's going to change the outlook of this team. And that's unfortunate for a guy that really hasn't had a chance because of outlying things that have happened to prove himself. But it's getting to the point where you might run out of time. So I think the biggest conversation has been the bullpen, as you said. And I was thinking about this last night. It's like, I'm going to ask JD to rank his confidence rankings of people in the bullpen right now. Mm-hmm. And I thought you would struggle with that because it would be a lot of...
No, I can do it immediately.
Nobody. Okay, give me that.
No, I can do that immediately because obviously Jordan Romano is number one, right? Hold on. But right before I do that, last thing on Pearson, all I'll say mm-hmm. is that I don't feel too bad, though, about him, even if they have him miss as a player, just simply because... they've hit on so many other of their prospects. Like Manoah going from a guy that was projected when he was drafted as like his high end being that he could be a number two pitcher on a staff, but likely was going to be a mid rotation guy, and turning into a bona fide ace already in his career, already to me supersedes what, like, you drafted two guys and one of them turned out to be an ace. That already worked out for me. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been what we expected him to be. And there was a little fear when he first came up, and he wasn't that right away, that it was going to translate, but he got himself into incredible shape, or much better shape, worked on his body, worked on his craft, and got himself to a level where the only reason he didn't win MVP is because we saw, like, Babe Ruth walk mm-hmm. the earth again in Los Angeles. Bo Bichette has worked out. He has superseded everything that we would have ever thought from Bo Bichette. Like, we thought this guy would never be able to field his position defensively, and now he has done that, and he is a guy who is just who hits every single time. Alejandro Kirk, a 23-year-old catching prospect, who ends up being, well, younger last year, I guess, but who flies through the minor leagues, and we go, can this guy actually play? And now he's, like, competent behind the plate. You're seeing Gabriel Moreno. Sorry. Oof, that was close.
Moreno.
I got it wrong both times.
Yeah. Moreno. Yeah, I have it written on my computer now. Like, yeah. It's like on a sticky note where it's as soon as I need to say his name, I look up and it's Moreno.
Yeah, long way to go with him. Long way to go with him. But early signs are, oh my God, they might have another stud on their hands. Like, the hit rate they have had with their top end prospect guys has been so unbelievable that they're just due for a guy that I almost there's part of me that just looks at Nate Pearson and goes, there's no way this happens because baseball isn't this way where all the top prospects hit, right? Mm-hmm. Ask a Mariners fan. Okay, so bullpen rankings. Obviously, mm-hmm. Jordan Romano, one. Tim Mayza is number two for me. Tim Mayza has proven to me that he is a... like, you don't need a loogie. You have Tim Mayza. Mm-hmm. He is that role. After that, it's actually David Phelps. I think that I have Phelps slightly ahead of Simber just because Simber is a contact guy. That's probably a little unfair given who Adam Simber has been for the Blue Jays, but this is my just right now confidence mm-hmm. rankings, and I love the way that Phelps battles. Then it's Simber. There's really no gap between them. If you want to flip one with the other, that's where it's at. Then it's Jimmy Garcia, and then the list is over because it's Trent Thornton after that. Like, there's no other guys. Like, that's... well, yeah, he is kind of becoming my guy. Dead last is Trevor Richards. I hate watching Trevor Richards pitch. I don't mean to be so extreme, but I really do. Julian Merriweather, I've completely written off his career. I know that, again, our friend Chris Black wanted to put him up in the level of excellence because he pitched one game. But, yeah, I've written him off completely. I think that he is, like, tantalizing to Charlie, but I've never seen someone who throws it that hard who has this that little movement. And, yeah, they need more guys. Because yep. Trevor Richards was supposed to be a guy for them, and he's absolutely unequivocally not. Trent Thornton might be able to fill a little bit of bulk, but, again, they need punch-outs, and they need to get it soon. And so whoever's selling, Blue Jays are buying, okay? It's like where, if you're at a hot dog stand in Rogers Center and you're with Ailish Forfar walking the concourse, she's like, I'm buying. It's like, you got dogs?
Unless it's water, because I'm buying that outside the stadium.
Yeah, exactly, because you're smart. Okay, Stanley Cup Finals. What a start. Like,
lived up to the hype.
And it looked like it was going to be just your classic Lightning, we punt the first game. Because they were getting smashed early in that game. That was just...
which surprised me significantly, because I had thought the opposite. Like, it's like, whatever I'm predicting, hey, this team's going to have lots of rust. they're not going to play well. This team is extremely well rested. They're going to be behind and slow. It's like the opposite happened. And I don't know if altitude is a real thing. I know a lot of people tried to say that. It really felt like it last night, though, when they got on the ice in the first period. They were like shelled.
What do you mean if altitude is a real thing, like a real thing in this game?
No, I know it's a real thing in life, but like, you know, how much is this going to impact them right away? They've been there for a few days. It really felt like they were struggling to find their legs to keep up with Colorado, who came out and absolutely handed them a mess in the first period. So you're right. I liked the bounce back. That's the Tampa Bay team that I anticipate to see moving forward, but ends up being a one-shot game in the end after they looked out of it for quite a while.
Yeah, I thought you were saying that you don't know if altitude's a real thing in terms of
I have experienced altitude personally.
Well,
I'm not an NHL player that's been there for a few days that was practicing, but I felt like something was happening there for sure.
Seriously, though, I think that was an underrated advantage that we forget about and thought that you could really see it on Tampa Bay. Like, did you see Maroon in the box at the end of that game?
Yeah.
I know he's played a full hockey game, so he's tired. But you're not used to seeing guys gasping for air the way that Maroon was. Mm-hmm. You texted me asking if the broadcasters were okay.
Okay, we need to get one of the broadcasters on the show because during the intermissions, I felt like they were even struggling to catch their breath. Like, they're talking so fast and they're okay. And then, and I thought, wow, like they're struggling with the altitude just to keep up like the pace of conversation. So clearly it was an underrated thing. I did not think about it once before yesterday's game.
Me neither. And I think it caught Tampa Bay a little flat-footed in that game. Mm-hmm. I'm anticipating that they have a better showing in game two out of the gate. One, because they'll adjust to the altitude a little bit better. But two is, again, we talked to Bourne about this, but Tampa has been masterful in their adjustments throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it is one of their signature things as a team. I thought Vasilevsky was pretty poor early on in that game. He let in some squeakers that you're not used to him seeing.
But that's a game one trend for Vasilevsky, and I also didn't put the thought towards like him having not as strong as starts. His save percentage in game ones, this is they updated this during the broadcast, so it might not be accurate after the game, but game one save percentage is 4.51, and games 2-7, 1.9.
Yeah, so...
So it's a completely different Vasilevsky in a game one. I don't know what it is, but...
He did settle in though, because he was kind of rough. I don't say rough because Colorado played extremely well and they were just peppering him. But throughout that entire game, he became Vasilevsky. Like that power play at the end of the game, where I go, Patrick Maroon, you may have just killed your team. It's the very end of a game. And he made two just monstrous saves where I went, oh, they're going to win this hockey game because of Vasilevsky. And I kept coming back to what we talked to all these former players about, which is the confidence you have to make a mistake when you're playing in front of a goaltender like that, and how there were just multiple moments from the first period onward where Tampa, it looked like they were able to normalize their play throughout the game, and a lot of it was because Vasilevsky seemed to settle into the series. I would guess that with their backs against the wall in Game 2, you're going to see elite Vasilevsky again. You're going to see a much better version of Victor Hedman. You're not going to see them get off to as slow of a start. However, if you're a Colorado fan or you're a Colorado backer, you feel incredible about two things. Your forward depth appears to just be much better in terms of amount of dangerous guys who can create plays for themselves. Even without Nazem Kadri, they still have that in spades. They are just wave after wave after wave of player. You saw it yesterday with the first line, the second line, the third line. Makar didn't really have himself a night. Neither did McKinnon. They had some moments, but neither of those guys were what we've seen from them in the past. And the other guys on Colorado were brilliant. The other forwards for them and their blue line were able to push the play, and really, like, you're not used to seeing Tampa Bay that way. When they've lost and they haven't looked as up to par with, it didn't look like that. That was a game where clearly Colorado imposed their DNA on the game, and they dictated the way that it was supposed to be. So that's
number
one.
It's funny because that was one of the things that I thought Tampa Bay had a really good advantage with, is having depth and having that fourth line that actually contributes more than just hitting and existing. But they were out-muscled by the bottom six of Colorado last night. Also, I think I said
close.
I think I said save percentage, but I meant goals against average. But anyway,
sure.
You understand. But I will say the thing about Makar that impressed me is that the Taves-Makar pairing, they were put on some heavy minutes against Kucherov. I think they played like almost 10 minutes against them and limited them to just like two shots on goal. So their shutdown role is still incredibly important. But yeah, you didn't have the same flashy Makar or flashy MacKinnon night that you had expected. But the depth is what Colorado won in terms of the battle between last night, and that's going to be essential moving forward.
They just have so many scary guys. And by the way, that Kucherov play was, oh my God. I keep coming back to it, but he's either brilliant or he's infuriating, and he makes that play to get them on the board, and you go, oh, right, you have that ability.
Like, yeah, your front runner
you
guy.
Do that. Sorry, it was their second goal, but even still, it was just, wow, it was just phenomenal. But yeah, I really like JT Compher. Obviously, the second line was brilliant. Nikushkin was just, wow.
What a
force
game
he was
for
in
him,
that game.
Eh?
Yeah, he just, all over the ice, all game long. And it's just, yeah, it's just, they are a team that has, I would say, even without Kadri right now, seven scary guys. Like, seven scary forwards who, when they're on the ice, you notice them right now. And so, yeah, that was their real imprint. The other thing is just that atmosphere. It's not just the altitude. That is a hot crowd. That is a live crowd.
I was so impressed.
That's the closest thing hockey has right now to a soccer crowd. Where,
you know,
it's
funny,
rowdy
even,
from the beginning.
Yeah, rowdy from the beginning, sorry. But even the broadcast, like, they were shocked. They go to multiple hockey games a year. They are there. They live in the moment. And they, post-game, were almost stunned at how incredible that crowd was and that they stayed and the game had ended and the entire stadium, arena, was still full of people. They clearly have waited so long for that opportunity. They've willed their team to just find a way, which is their little slogan. But even my brother, who's a hockey guy, you know, Jordy, he texts me, he goes, are they playing like fake crowd noise? This is the best crowd I've ever watched in sports. And I thought, like, I can't agree more. Like, it was electric. So big shoes to fill there in Tampa, where it's going to be a bunch of Leaf fans.
Well, here's the thing about this. It's because we in Canada think that we do hockey the best. And that no one comes close to us.
It's our game.
Yeah. And we go, nothing is like the Bell Center on a hot night. And that's true. On a regular season game, I think that the Bell Center is a place where there's an energy to it when there's a big game there that is different from other places. Because there's just like the way it flows with the gameplay is different. People are just locked in a different way. But you watch something like that and you go, oh, right. American sporting culture is different. Like, it just is. It's more vocal. It's more involved. It's a little bit more raucous. We're a bit more reserved when it comes to our sports. It's a little bit more of a buttoned up, embarrassed culture. And that's just the facts. And so even with a hockey game where that's where Canadians let loose, and yeah, people have fun at games. I'm not pretending like this is always a church whenever you go to a hockey game in Canada. I just think it's one of those things where we forget sometimes just how incredible some of these like sports cities are in the United States that really get the games, have had a long-standing tradition of teams, and who just know how to get up for moments like this. Like that again, that Colorado crowd was red hot. They were incredible. When they sing that Blink-182 song, you sing along with it. You're sitting on your couch and you sing along with the people and you go, God, that'd be so fun. It was a soccer feel. And that's what I'm always the most jealous of, is tailgating traditions, like when it comes to being a sports fan. Tailgating traditions in the States, how you go to it, especially when it's college, and you go, oh my God, this is it. You have this on Saturdays, college football tailgating, and we have hockey night in Canada at night. We're watching the bar. Like, it's not... It's so, the discrepancy between the two of them is so big, it sucks. And I always think about soccer fans and how they have their songs and their chants and their cheers and how funny it is and how coordinated it is. Like, I watched this viral video of, I guess it's not just soccer, but it was rugby, a high school team in rugby where they're all doing like stomp and clap and singing mm-hmm. at their high school event. And I'm like, that's so cool. You would never do that here.
In my NCAA women's hockey, which is definitely not the most popular of NCAA sports, but there was games that you went to. I remember specifically we played at Wisconsin. The entire arena was sold out. And the other teams, the whole crowd had specific things that they would do when our starting lineup was announced. They all had a newspaper and they would read the newspaper and pretend that they were disinterested. When they had specific chants, they had specific reactions, and it was so cool to play in that atmosphere. And I thought, well, I've never played in an atmosphere like this, especially for women's hockey, which is, as I said, not the most popular sports as of yet. And other teams we'd go to had chants, they had songs, they had so much tradition. And that is something that America has over us. I can admit it. I've been in it, and I think it's so awesome. And I wish that we could take some lessons from that. But yeah, I've seen it from the college level onwards. But last night, Colorado fans, like, they deserve a star. Like, that is just an incredible atmosphere. I can't wait to see see another game there, maybe multiple more games there. And
really want game seven. I really want a game seven in Colorado in front of that crowd and see how the nerves get to them mm-hmm. or what. Anyway, I hope the series mm-hmm. just continues in some iteration of what we've seen so far, because it was awesome. There were stars making incredible plays, goalies making big saves, a red hot crowd, two really quality hockey teams. It was ugly early. They were sloppy early. It was just turnover, 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 and then the game settled in. It was great. But that's about as good of a start as you're going to get. I cannot wait for more. We'll discuss more at 7 o'clock with Nick Kyprios. But first, what's on the A-list today?
You know what? You kind of were touching on it about cities with good fan bases. And I know we've gone through other people's rankings before, but this one is from a friend of the show that went viral for his fan base rankings. I think you're not going to like it, which is something that is a common occurrence with the A-list. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sports on 590 The Fan. It's Baby Friday, or for me, it's Real Friday, because I'm out of here post-show. I'm going to go live it up at F1 in Montreal.
Oh, good for you.
Yep, that's right. Good for me. Poor JD has to work. And I will be posting just copious amounts of fun stories from the weekend. But we'll get to that after the A-list, because I got a couple things that I think will get you fired up on this Baby
Friday. To be
fair,
I will start today by having my stories be all my favorite bets down at the ballpark.
Okay, good.
And yeah, in the stick zone, in the stick zone,
the
in the swamp,
stick zone,
in the swamp. Just, you know, that, here.
You know what? They should have a deodorant sponsored section, the stick zone, because it's sticky and you put a stick of deodorant. You know, just invented something.
Yeah, the
marketing.
The feeling of is wondering when you first get that waft of BO, whether it's you.
Is it you?
Yeah, and the fear of it being you, and then the check, and then being relieved and knowing it's not. But seeing the person who, like, all of a sudden they clap with their arms at their sides, you like, know, like,
uh-oh.
They're like,
they know.
Yeah, they know, and they can't, like, put their arms above. They're just saying that they put the jacket back on. It's too, hey, take your jacket. No, I'm okay. Knowing you're out in public and you've got it, you've got the stink, that's got to be one of the bottom five feelings on earth. Like,
never happened to me, so girls don't sweat.
Yeah, no. Bulgarian girls, no. You're the worst.
No.
that's okay. What do we got today?
Okay, Josh, let's hit it.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Okay, so before yesterday, Colorado didn't really know much about their fan base, if they would be something that could make this list. They didn't, as a spoiler, but maybe our boy Mad Dog Russo will re-list or redraft what he said was his top five fan bases by city. So he's obviously got a ESPN appearance weekly on First Take. He decided, I'm not sure what sparked it, but time to do one of those rankings of top five fan bases by city. And by him, that meant fan base, not team's success, but their enthusiasm, their loyalty, etc. So I'm going to read you numbers 5 to 2, and then I'll let you hear number one. Number 5, Philadelphia. And he goes, I can't put them any higher because of Game 7, 1982.
Oh, I'm so excited. I thought I was about to hear you do your Mad Dog Russo impression. You do. You got to do his voice now. Like, no. Like, yeah, you
after, just said you started. After number one. No, I need to hear him again. I just get nervous. After I hear the video clip of number one, I'll try to repeat him. But, okay, so he said Philadelphia number 5. Can't put them any higher because of the 1982 game against Milwaukee where they had 5,800 people at a playoff game in Game 7. Number 4, Chicago. He goes, they're a bit soft. They don't boo much, but Wrigley Field is fun, but I can't put them higher because of that. Number 3, New York. He said, I would put them higher, but it's an event town, so people just go to stuff regardless. Number 2, Detroit. He said, blue collar, hardcore sports town, gritty. Okay, I'm not sure if you agree with any of those yet, but here is his reasoning on which town or city is number 1.
And number 1, without any questions, it knows the kind of city it is. It's gritty. It doesn't pretend it's anything it isn't. The Cavs, they don't have a hockey, which bothers me, but still, the Cavs, the Guardians, and the Browns. 3WE in Cleveland, Pete Franklin, the founder of Sports Talk Radio. What a city this is. I lived there in a minute. Larry Nance once told me, you know what? I don't like the cold weather, but I love this town. They're in its soul. Cleveland. By the way, the mistake, by
you
the way,
have,
number one.
You have the
not
Cleveland.
Not even debatable.
You have the Cleveland, the city of Cleveland.
Yes.
As the number one fan
absolutely.
Base.
Absolutely.
You got to be crazy.
Oh, that's a great city.
God. I mean, this is an abomination.
No, it's not.
I mean, you have outdone yourself here.
No,
you
I haven't.
Yourself. Let me
that's,
ask you
that's a great list.
First of all, it's horrible. It's a horrible list.
Okay. Obviously, Stephen A. Smith doesn't agree with Cleveland being number one on his rankings. JD, how do you feel about his top five?
Well, I think this list is created to incite reactions, right? Like Boston being off the list as they're in an NBA Finals. And they already had a shot fired at that fan base by people on the Golden State Warriors saying that the Cleveland Cavaliers had the louder stadium, the more energetic stadium, the one that was more intimidating for the Warriors to walk into. I believe, anyways, that Mad Dog Russo is playing a little bit off of that, if I'm going to question the list whatsoever. I think that the list is fairly kind of in the range of closeness for if you had to do overall city rankings. Boston would clearly be in the top five when it comes to sports towns. I don't know how you couldn't have it. And all of my places, if I had to pick in terms of, hey, what are the biggest sports towns, they would all be like Northeast or it depends on the sport too. Like, I guess if you're going across the board and you're saying who's the most passionate for all of them, then it has to be Northeast teams. You know how it is. And people in Toronto should know this too. Like, think about when the weather is nice. Remember when they tried to put the NHL, like, even as they're going deeper here into the summer, but remember when they tried to put the bubble in, like, August and you went, it's only nice here for a couple months, so I'll be going outside. There were always these theories with sports, right, of, well, maybe the NHL could move its calendar so that it's not directly across from basketball, and it could try to capitalize on the dead season, which is the summer, and hockey fans in this country went, no, thank you.
That's when I'm at my cottage.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the cottage. I'm going to be taking advantage of a beach. I will be going on hikes. I will be going to patios. I will not be inside my apartment watching the Anaheim Ducks play. Thank you. We will not be doing it. So weather matters 1,000,000,000%. Like, can you go outside or are you stuck inside the entire time? Do you have that chip on your shoulder of the of a cold place? So that's my number one thing.
Having all four of the massive sports markets is really important as well. Like, I was surprised because he goes, I know they don't have a hockey team. Like, I think that's kind of important.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this on the fly. Well, here's the thing, though, about that, is that in the States, the NHL
Number four on their rankings.
It's not number four. It's below four.
What's above soccer?
Well, it depends, one, how you, like, define football. Because football is two things. It's college football and it's NFL football.
That's true. So, I'm grouping those.
Yeah. Okay, I guess. It's always humbling whenever we think about these sports when it comes to the United States. Like, hey, the NBA Finals, when they do their very best ratings, does, like, worse than Thursday Night Football when it's Panthers-Falcons. So keep that in mind when we're judging successes against each other. I mean, if you want to call it the core four, you can. I think that there are a lot of markets in the United States where hockey is completely irrelevant. Even when you do go to Florida and they have the Tampa Bay Lightning, that's what's so sad about it is, sure, there are Lightning fans and you'll see people at a parade and they can fill a stadium night in, night out if they are really, really competitive. Same with Florida. But for the most part, they're quote-unquote sports talk radio. You heard it. Remember those guys that broke the Florida Panthers news? It was like a late-night radio show, and they didn't know how to pronounce any of the names, right? Like, they don't pay attention. They don't know. So I don't think it really factors in much to me when it comes to American sports cities, like what the hockey environment is like. Because to me, it's like, yeah, Minnesota has a great hockey environment. Colorado has a great hockey environment. There are places in the States where you find that, but it's not the same across the board. It's so hard to do. It's so hard to do. A lot of these rankings get based off of, like, our cliches. You don't get to live in all the states and all the provinces and really, like, soak up the sports culture. But I would say that throughout my lifetime, the ones that would definitely be locks are New York, Boston, and Philly. Like, those three have to be in there. I don't know if the Browns are going to even feel the football team this year. It's so embarrassing. The Deshaun Watson thing is actually... It's like we haven't talked a lot about it, but it's just like this balance of the most embarrassing, most unbelievably stupid story that I can remember. Like, they traded three first round picks for a guy that they knew was this guy, and there's more and more that keeps coming out against them. He's not playing this year, so you can write that off. They gave him more guaranteed money than any other quarterback ever. Like, it's not outside the realm of possibility that we continue to find out more about Deshaun Watson and that he never even plays football anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, the potential for the cap hit of him against the Browns, the loss of draft picks, the way that this could just throw them, like the morality stuff aside, like the all the implications for that franchise is just like this story is looming over them. And yeah, Cleveland's done with sports for a while. If you lose LeBron James and you make that trade in a decade, it's just, yeah, I don't think that you can have Cleveland as your number one sports town anymore, because I don't think people are going to go to games anymore.
No, not sure how they recover from you're right, this last decade. Okay, so one guy that clearly holds Toronto very high on his rankings of cities is Fred VanVleet. It's been nearly 6 weeks since the Raptors were eliminated from the playoffs. We haven't really heard much from the players. Obviously, they take some time off. They're not in the media cycle. But Fred was talking with the media yesterday, somebody that missed the finals, the final game of the Raptors season because of the hip injury. He says he's finally back on the court and is feeling great. And he touched on a few talking points, which are things that we've tossed around a little bit on the show, but great to hear his perspective, starting with his time in Toronto and his contract status. So we have that clip right now.
Yeah, of course. I love being a Raptor. I would love to spend my entire career here. We have a great relationship with the city, the franchise, ownership, management. You know, it's a match made in heaven for me. I love being a Toronto Raptor, and hopefully, you know, we can continue that on. So I'm not really too worried about contract, you know, discussions or anything like that. That's just the business aspect of it, and I'm confident that we'll figure it out.
So confident that they'll figure out the contract discussions. Obviously, he's got a player option in the fourth year. He's eligible for a contract extension this July 8th. So does that give you any more confidence that things are going to be fine, or is it just a media PR type of response?
I got to be honest. I don't even know why this is a thing at all. Like, what he said is what every athlete says about every city in the history of sports until they demand for trades. And that's why it's actually a story, is because it's so odd to see athletes like Jack Eichel say, no, I want out of town. Mm-hmm. And then you go, okay, that's what this is. Is this athletes asking for being out of town? And like, that's Fred VanVleet saying he wants to be, I'm sure those are true. I'm not doubting his words, but like, I don't know why this is a story. I'll be honest. I don't understand why Fred VanVleet saying he likes being a Toronto Raptor is a story, especially when he's so, I don't want to say lying, but when he goes, I don't care about the business. Fred, your entire brand is bet on yourself. Mm. Your whole thing has been the way that you've structured your contracts to hit free agency to make sure you get your money. He's up for a 3-year, $89 million extension this offseason, which he can decline and then go into the, I think it's the next season, and extend for 4 years, $114. Fred VanVleet is thinking about those things, okay? He's 1,000,000,000,000% thinking very, very much about those things. As he should, as is his right. It doesn't mean I think he cares one iota less about the Toronto Raptors or playing basketball, but Fred VanVleet cares about Fred VanVleet's position in basketball first, whether or not the Raptors are going to be competitive, if he's going to be a starting point guard, and if he's going to make a ton of money. And like, that's not unique to a lot of basketball players. Like, that's a lot. That's just about everybody. But yeah, this whole idea that, like, are we really living in this world where a guy says, I like being a Toronto Raptor, and we glom onto that still and go, he says he likes, that should be done with and over with. Okay.
So there's a second audio clip, which I think touches more on what you just said about where his status maybe on the team might be with like how they're going to run the offense. So we'll play that second clip now and see if that sparks any different debate with you.
I certainly have no issue, you know, taking a step back if it's going to make our team better. There's certain nights this year where I needed to score 25, 30, you know, often, a lot of times, especially when we had guys out. And there'll be nights when I don't need to do that. So I'm looking for all of those guys to take a step up, you know, as myself and Pascal have done every year. And so we'll see a lot of those younger guys take another step up, and that should increase our team value and our the way we play. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, like, again, what else is he supposed to say? I want more shots. It should be more about me. I'd like a bigger role. His role is already huge. He's the face of the franchise. He's the leader of the franchise. Things go through him. He's the starting point guard on this team. That's always going to be the understanding of an intelligent point guard. I think he means what he says, by the way, there, where he goes, I need to some nights give them something different. Sometimes it's scoring, sometimes it's playmaking, and more off of my shoulders is good for the team. So, yeah, again, he's telling us stuff that we already know, that he would re-sign with the Raptors if they give him a bunch of money, and that he's willing to take a reduced role, because that's always been the Fred VanVleet story, is the guy gives you what you need when you need it on a given night. The reason why the Raptors lost in the playoffs this year is that he was unable to deliver that. Like, a big part of that reason that they lost was that. And we love Fred VanVleet so much here that he kind of got zero blame. There's no Fred takes. There weren't a lot of, there were some, I guess, social media, but I don't really go with the most extreme takes on social, because I believe that there's such a smaller percentage than people think they are. Even when something's like trending, you go, okay, well, how many tweets is it? And half the tweets when something's trending are, or more than half the tweets are usually people defending against those hot takes where they do the straw man argument. So yeah, Fred's going to be here for a while is my guess. His role is going to have to adapt and change, because Scotty Barnes is going to need to handle the rock, and he is going to be the future of this team. And frankly, if you're going to be a Toronto Raptor, it's going to be about how do you fit around Scotty. Like, that's going to be the future of this organization. So, yeah, I have no doubts that Fred would like to stay here, make $114 million, and win basketball games. Like, why was he even doing these things?
I think it's because of the award he won. So some media coverage around
because he hadn't spoken much about it.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. yeah, just kind of piggybacked on that, talking about the season ahead and how it ended last year. So something to keep an eye on. I know Raptors fans were at least happy to hear some of those positive things. So we're going to actually take a break and then talk to Nick Kyprios, getting up a little early for us. That guy who's got on the 9 a.m. show now, talk about last night's game and if Colorado has any altitude advantage whatsoever. So that's next on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.